Yes. Okay, so I'm going to report on some work I've been doing over the last few years with Gérald Martin in Paris. And you can find information in these papers and other papers on the web. So we've been struggling with the idea of embedding dark energy in supergravity. So the main motivation for that is that we want to do some model building and related to maybe eventually ideas in string theory or related ideas. So I won't be talking about the cosmological constant problem at all, and I will stay at the classical level only. So I won't discuss loops and correction to the potentials I'm going to present. And sometimes people say that it's extremely easy to build test models because you can basically choose whichever potential you want and then cook up a model and get the results that you've put in the first place. And I just want to emphasize, if you're not a supergravity person, that the what you should get from this talk is that it's effectively a lot more complex than that in supergravity. And most of the time, you fail these problems, and the models do not work. So let me just motivate slightly what is going to follow. So if you were at the conference yesterday, it's going to be a very right-wing talk. So I'm just going to modify the right side of the Einstein equation. And I'm going to assume that dark energy is a scalar field. If not, then we had plenty of very nice talks in the last 4 days. And if it's the case, then the main motivation would be to get models of high energy physics, which would lead to dark energy, and have a situation which is akin to the one you have for inflation, where you can build, for instance, supergravity models of inflation and compare with WMAP and falsify your theories. Or even better, get the situation you have with dark matter, where effectively in the MSSM you only have two parameters, gauging the masses and the gravitational mass, and with that you do quite a lot of very nice phenomenology. But we're not at that stage at the moment concerning dark energy. There's no proper model which would be well motivated from the beyond the standard model physics point of view. So some of the questions that we don't know how to solve, and which were very important in the last four days in most of the talks, is that what is dark energy? Is there a field? What is the name of the field which drives dark energy? Does it couple to matter? Because if it couples, then it leads to gravitational problems. Does it couple to dark matter? How many fundamental parameters do you have? And how is it related to experiments? And if you're a model builder like me, then you want to know, is it related to SUSY, to extra dimensions, to string theory? And if it is, then how do you do that? You falsify all these models you might be able to build. So just the outline now of my talk. So in the first part, I'll be presenting the rosy part. So if you were able to build a nice dark energy model in supergravity, you will have definitely a coupling between quintessence and the observable sector, the MSSM, so the standard model. You would have coupling to dark matter. You would have also effects in the gravitational sector of your theory, and also variation of constants. So I'll specify a bit more how you get these results in the first few transparencies. And then in the second part, I'll be staring at the scalar potential in the ice, and I'll show you very briefly that it's difficult to get models which do what you want to obtain. And most of the time you're going to get models with a cosmology which is boring, or you get problems with gravity, and at the end I'll be talking about something that is work in progress. When you do warp models, you might be able to evade some of the problems I'm going to mention. Okay, so the idea behind what I'm going to talk is that what you want at the end of the day is a theory, a scalar field, a potential and maybe something which is run away and the potential goes down, the field rolls down towards infinity, stops. And if it's a nice model, then you have an attractor. And you're driven towards a large field, and now you're round about the Planck scale. And you have a good reason to be there, that's because there's an attractor, and you stay there now. And as soon as you see that, you can see that you're going to be driven towards very large values of the Planck mass. And if you are driven to large values like that, from the Beyond the Sand model point of view, maybe the only possibility to achieve this goal is to go directly to gravity, because you're involving Planck scale physics, if you don't want to go to something which is beyond field theory. So this is what I'm going to be talking about. Okay, so that's basically the framework. So in the usual models of supergravity, you have an observable sector, the MSSM, the standard model, extended to SUSY. And you need to break SUSY because you've never seen Gaussian nodes and superbarners. So you've got a hidden sector which breaks SUSY. And the way you transmit the breaking between the hidden sector and the observable sector is usually by granting. You can also do it by gauge interactions, but in this talk I'll be mainly talking about gravity. And then you want to introduce dark energy. And dark energy shouldn't be coupled too much to the observable sector, otherwise you will have deviation from Newton's law, for instance. So you put it in a separate sector. And you don't really want it to be interacting with the hidden sector as well, because that's going to change too much of the particle physics, the electroweak symmetry breaking, for instance. So you get this picture that dark energy is a new sector interacting gravitationally with the usual sectors in SUSY models. So now, once you've got this picture, I need to go a bit more into the technicalities. And at the technical level, all you need to build models are two functions for each sector. So you don't pay attention if you're not a supergravity person to the details. But all you need to know is that there's a function k, which is called the Keller potential, and a function w, which is called superpotential. You've got a copy for each of the sectors. And this one is give you basically the kinetic terms, and this one the interactions. And you replicate that for the three different sectors of your theory. For instance, here in the observable sector, you have the Yukawa couplings giving you masses for the fermions of the standard model. Okay. So eventually what you want to do is to break SUSY, and this should happen at very high scale, maybe the Gut scale or something which is very high compared to the weak scale, for instance. And all the fields which are in the hidden sector are going to be getting them stabilized, get a mass, and then basically you can forget about them, so they're just like constants if you want. But now that you've introduced a new sector, which is the dark energy one, effectively when you solve this equation, so you try to integrate out the hidden sector, you can pick up some dependence on the low energy physics, which is the field Q, which is dark energy. And this scale is the scale where SUSY is broken, and this is the vague of the field, which is driving the breaking of SUSY. And one important aspect in all that is that there's one scale which appears when you break SUSY, which is the gravitational mass. If you want, it's the scale which tells you what the standard model particles are going to get in terms of masses. So that's the overall scale. And in principle, it can pick up a small dependence on quintessence because of three factors like that. So everything becomes Q-dependent. Okay, once you've done that, so you're now at low energy, so below the scale of SUSY breaking and before the electronic transition, you've got a model which can be obtained by viewing it as an effective theory. So effectively, it's like the Planck scales keep decoupled, and you only keep physics at very low scale, so the TV scale if you want. And it can compute at the classical level the dark energy potential, the one which is depending on the dark energy sector. And you can see immediately that this is the potential that you would have if the dark energy sector were completely independent of the rest. And you get extra contributions coming from the coupling to the Higgins sector and the observable sector. And the physics is going to be highly dependent on the way gravitationally the Higgins sector is coupled to the quintessence sector. And that's going to change most of the results that you would have normally if you were forgetting that physics involves more than just the dark energy physics, and there's also the standard model and the Susie Braking one. Okay, so that's for the dark energy side of the field model before the electrolytic transition.
That's
because I've assumed I'm going back. I've assumed that the sector can be there's the Q field and you can have more than the Q field.
Q would be the
quintessence. Yeah, there's out of the fields in the dark energy sector, you would have Q and many more fields in principle. And one of the fields would be the one that you would identify as the quintessence field.
Okay, so the quintessence field will be a combination of Q, X, and Y?
Yes, in principle it could be, yes, but I've specified just, I'm just picking one out of the many fields which are in the dark energy sector, and I call it the quintessence field.
Okay, and the carrier potential of the quintessence and the Higgins sector are separate. The carrier potential, yes. Not the K. Okay.
Yes, I'll come back to that later because I can see what you're thinking of. Okay, so so that's the Susie Braking's here, the scalar potential, and also when you break Susie and you evoke the Susie Braking scale. The observable sector, so all your standard model fields, so that's the standard model. That's all the fermions in the standard model, the electron and the quarks. They pick up new terms, which are called soft curves. And that these soft curves are crucial when you want to break SU2 cross U1, the electrolytic group. So when you get a mess like that, and they're effectively parameterized by the quintessence sector and the Higgins sector. And in any model, you can calculate and then go to see the influence that it has on the way the SU2 cross U1 symmetry is broken. There's also another ingredient that you need when you want to study the electrolytic phase transition. It's the Gaussian masses. So that's the Gaussian nodes are the superpartners associated to the gauge fields. And if you want to get Gaussian masses, because you never see it in accelerators, Gaussian nodes, the coupling constant and supergravity are field dependent. And if the Z and the fields in the Higgins sector get Q dependent, so they get a dependence on the quintessence field, then automatically you're going to get variation of constants. And that can be a blessing, or that can be a problem. That has to be seen in particular models. What sort of variation? Well, you can have the fine structure constant, which would vary because of variations induced by this function and high energy. Or you can have the proton to electron mass ratio, which also would vary because this function here for the QCD group would vary as well. But that would be interesting phenomenology, and that's not too much of a problem to avoid the constraints. There's something which is much more serious, which comes from gravity. You're going to run into gravitational problems, and to really describe the sort of gravitational problems you're going to face, I need to be able to describe the way fermions in the standard model get a mass, because the mass is really going to be what gravity detects. So in the standard model, the Higgs has a potential which is of that form. The details are not very important in SUSY. And all these soft terms that I described before now can get a dependence on quintessence. And as a consequence, the two Higgs fields that you have in CZ can become Q-dependent. And as soon as you do that, that's absolutely drastic, because you get results like the bosons would have a Q-dependence. And more importantly, all the fermions, the electrons, the quarks, would become Q-dependent as well. And I noticed that there's two parts for this dependence. There's something which comes from the Keller potential of the condensance field. And there's something which comes from the electrowave breaking, from the phase of the Higgs fields, the two Higgs fields. You can summarize this fact by saying that at low energy, so after the electrowave transition, then your model boils down to a scalar tensor theory of a particular type. So you've got the quintessence sector, that's the dark energy potential that I calculated a few or 3 minutes ago. And that's the coupling, which now depends on that's the coupling which comes from the way the masses of the fermions depend on the quintessence field. And it's coming with this expression here. So it depends on the waves of the Higgs field and the prefactor, depending on the Keller potential of quintessence. And something which is dependent on the Higgs sector, which is model dependent. Because of that, at the microscopic level, you have a violation of the equivalence principle. But obviously, it's more difficult because you have to go from the microscopic level to the macroscopic level. And I'm not going to talk about going to the macroscopic level, but you can find out in our papers. Okay, just why is it so important is that because as soon as you have these couplings to condensance in the two functions I call A and AU and AD coming from the variation of the masses of the fermions in the standard model, you have deviations from Newton's law. And these deviations are measured by the log derivative with respect to the condensance field of the mass of the fermions. And the Cassini experiments tell you that these numbers have to be extremely small, less than 10 to minus 5. And that's going to be one of the main constraints that I'm going to have on models. Because if I can calculate using the expressions I gave you before, the form of the couplings to gravity for the field which couples to the U Higgs field and the one which couples to the D Higgs field. And it's given by all that mess, but what you should see is that the leading term is something which depends on the Keller potential for quintessence. And there's effectively, there's a 1.5 here, but also another 1.5 which comes from these terms. So effectively, it's the derivative of the Keller potential with respect to Q, which is the dominant term, and which is absolutely crucial for these models. Okay, so that was the nice part. So assuming that everything works, that I can get a nice potential in supergravity, which gives you quintessence, then it will have all these effects, variation of constants, and deviation from Newton's law. But now I have to go back to the potential that I presented and extract information from it to see what sort of behavior I can expect in a model-independent way. And there's effectively a large class of models which can be straight away excluded because they're not very interesting from the cosmological point of view. So these large classes, the most natural one is that when the Keller potential for the quintessence field is canonical. So it starts with something regular, so Q, Q bar plus an expansion in Q. As soon as you have something like that, and this potential becomes a function which is a quadratic function with the gravitational mass. So for people who know, that's just a soft term if you want for the quintessence field, which is of the order of M3/2. And something which is coming from WQ, so the quintessence interaction, surface interactions. So if you cook up a model where this is something which is decreasing, like you want a runaway potential, then this one is going up. And what you end up is you end up with a model with a minimum where Q is stabilized at very low value compared to the Planck scale, picking up a mass which is extremely large. So cosmologically, what you end up with is the quiescence field becomes stabilized instead of being run away at very small value. It will converge to the minimum before BBM, stay there to get a pure cosmological constant. And that's a very expensive way of getting just a pure cosmological constant. So all these models basically are not excluded, but are not very interested. So that's a very large class of models, because that's as soon as you get a potential, a killer potential, which is regular at the origin in field space. And that's coming from this term here. This term, which is the inverse of the kinetic terms for the Q field, done the first derivative of the Keller potential, minus 3. 3 coming is a special number in supergravity. And if you want to avoid a large mass for the quintessence field, and hence no cosmological interest for the model, you have to get this number here very small, and extremely small compared to the gravitational mass. So the only natural way is to put this number equal to zero, and naturally you go to what is called no-scale supergravity. You can also get something which is interesting, just in case this number is a constant, because then all you're doing is shifting the cosmological constant, and then can reabsorb it maybe by using F terms from the Higgins sector. So that's another possibility which appears for the dilaton. Okay, so now I'm going the answer, the only possibility to avoid a problem that I found for regular killer potential is to go to singular ones. And the most natural ones are log functions with the coefficient here n, which is crucial. If n is 1, it's called the dilaton. If n is 3, it's most of the time moduli fields in when you can quantify in string theory. And you can get quite naturally in these models runaway potentials. So no scale for gravity can give you a runaway potential at the expense of fiddling with maybe the scales here. But the problem is that as soon as you do that, the coupling to gravity gives you a very strong no-go, because the coupling to gravity is root 6 for the moduli phases. And this is ruled out. You could the thing that because there's a coupling to matter, you could use the chameleon effect to avoid this problem, but effectively it's not the case, because to get a chameleon effect, the field has to be very small compared to Newton's potential, for instance, and the approximation I'm using here is that the fields are very large. All the vectors of the fields are very large. Otherwise, the gravity breaks down. So you can't use the chameleon effect in these models to get
the model. In the previous case, you had the runaway, and then you had the soft breaking terms to stabilize things. And why don't you also have soft breaking terms here to stabilize things?
Okay. So in principle, you can have stabilize. Yes. So I assumed. Maybe I should come back. Yeah. In this case, okay, of course, there should be, that's the dots that I put here. There could be effect from the hidden sector, which would give you corrections. But the leading term is always a constant. But it's possible that there could be some fine-tuning between the leading term and something which comes with the hidden sector, and we save the day. But that would require a very particular model. But I'll come back to models which are much more natural in a second. So Fernando was asking me about specific examples, and nothing much changes if you put the observable sector inside of the log. You still get generically large gravitational couplings, unless you do something very special. I'm talking about generically. In particular examples, it's possible that there could be cancellation very precise, which could save the model. One way which is quite nice to avoid all the problems is to use axions. So axions in the no-scale case, so you don't get mass for the axions, so that's nice. And at the same time, all the problems I had with the coupling with to gravity was coming from e to the k, where k is the Keller potential. And it's extremely similar to the eta problem in inflation. And there is a nice solution, which is to invoke a shift symmetry. So if you take the axion to the imaginary part of your field Q, and if the Keller potential is invariant under a shift symmetry like that, then there's no dependence, effectively, or a very weak dependence on the axion for the coupling to gravity. So you avoid problems with the coupling to gravity. But then you have a problem of scales, because you need to stabilize the real part. And the stabilization, the field's got to be stabilized with a large mass, when the imaginary part will pick up a mass which is very small, of the order of h naught. And how do you do that? Is which you can model. And I have an example to show you. But I'm not saying that it's not possible, but it would be a challenge to build this plane. Okay, and finally, there's another class of model which I think is very promising. It's the class of warp models. And warping, I'm going to just discuss it in the very simple case, which is the Randall-Sundrum case, where everything can be done explicitly. And in this case, all you do is you replace the Keller potential for the quintessence sector. Before you had -3 because of your no scale property, you don't want the gravity no mass for your quintessence field. And you had T+T bar, and that was the problem for the coupling to gravity. But now if you're warped in the Randall-Sundrum case, the Keller potential is modified. It's not T+T bar, but 1 - e^-kT, like that. And if t very small, you can retrieve the usual result. So when t small compared to the ADS curvature, then you retrieve the usual result. But if t is large, where the approximation is valid, then the Keller potential is very different. If you go to the normalized field, which is the one you want to describe when you want to couple to gravity, it's related to z in this way. And you can compute up to corrections depending on the hidden sector. The leading term for the coupling to gravity, so this one is the coupling to the fermions. And it's very different, you can see from the previous result, but you can get the two limits. Okay, so if you go to short distances, so z of order 1, then you retrieve the root 6 that you had before in the no-scale case. So that's excluded. But now if you go to another limit, which is large distance, so the brains, if you want, in the Randall-Sundrum case, would be very far away, then the coupling to gravity becomes very small and is proportional to z, so each z being the warp factor in this case. And that's a very nice situation, because at the same time, if you do an expansion in z, you can control all the terms in the expansion series. That's a very promising case. And as you want to get acceleration, it drives you to thinking that maybe for small values of z like that, in the context of warp models, you should be able to use methods that you use in inflation for small field inflation. So maybe build models like hybrid models. And they would automatically lead to no contradiction with gravity. And maybe a nice cosmology. So this is work in progress. Let me just conclude. Okay, so just to summarize, you can get nice physics by coupling quintessence of dark energy to the rest of particle physics in supergravity. And there's a coupling which is automatically there because gravity is always present in supergravity. There's many obstructions to quintessence models. The most important one is the fact that as soon as you couple to the Higgs vector, the quintessence fields want to pick up a mass which is of the order of the gravitational mass. And the gravitational mass is like a GeV in usual models of gravity-mediated break-in. And maybe the nicest avenue to go beyond these obstructions is to use work models. And that's where I want to stop.
The way you phrase the conclusion makes it sound like you could fix the problem with the axion, in the sense of the axion problem, the way you phrase it, was that you had a light axion, but then you had to figure out how to get a big mass for the real part. But it sounds like you generically get a big mass for everybody. The hard thing is get them to be light. So
yes.
If you had the phase detected so that it had a small scale, then the module sounds like it's always going to get a big mass from these supersymmetry breaking terms.
Yes.
It would be easy to maintain that hierarchy.
Yeah, I don't know how much exactly, because the difference in scale is quite large, so I don't know exactly if you can fix it to be what you want, but in principle, yes, it can be done. Yes, I agree.
More questions?